Okay, let's get into our lesson. I'm going to do a little deviation this morning from what I have written down on our notes. There's a reason for that. As I was reviewing our next lesson, which is the thousand-year rulership of Jesus and his saints according to our notes, I think we need to set the tone for what happens to cause this to occur. I didn't put that in my notes. I should have. That's my fault. But anyway, I want to do that. I want to set the tone for why are we having this millennial reign? What happens right before the millennial reign starts? So I want you to turn to the 19th chapter of Revelation. Excuse me. They were last. We've been there before, but I won't turn there right now. And I want to get us our mindset. Here we are. The tribulation has occurred. 7 years. Half the world's population is destroyed. The earth is in ruins. It's just been a horrible time. Two-thirds of Israel are dead. Their country has been ripped apart, torn apart. And by the way, I'll give you some reading if you really want to do some good, intense reading. If you go to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 40 through 48, if you will read those eight chapters, that describes what the nation of Israel does in their land, the temple, the third temple, and all of that occurs in those eight chapters. And that's when the millennial reign of Christ starts. But it tells you in detail what is going on in the nation of Israel. I'm not going to go there for time's sake. I'll let you do that on your homework time. But it's very interesting what happens to Israel. Any of you that have been over there, you know what it's like now. You've seen the hills and the valleys, and there's no flat spot in Jerusalem that I could find when I was there. But it's going to be a totally different atmosphere during the millennial reign. But chapters 40 through 48 in Ezekiel will tell you what that's going to be like. So I encourage you to read that. Turn to Revelation, the 19th chapter. Here we see in verse 11, Jesus is coming back. We talked about he's coming back on the white horse. We mentioned about the animals. And the armies of heaven are coming with him. Now, this is the end of the tribulation period. This is when all the armies of the world are gathered in Israel to destroy the nation of Israel, and he comes back to defend them. And this is what you get into Zechariah chapter 12, 13, and 14 describe this as well. But he's coming back. He's coming back with his army to stop the tribulation period. If you remember in Matthew 24, Jesus made the statement that it would be so bad at that time that unless he came back and stopped it, that all living things would die. In other words, the earth and every living being on this earth, human and animal, would be destroyed. This is his creation, and he's going to not let that happen, no matter what kind of fear mongering is going on today. And you hear a lot about it, and man's capable of it, but God's not going to let that happen. So he's going to come back and stop all of this that's going on. And I want to read you from the 11th verse through 21. I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. He that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. In righteousness he does judge and make war. Now notice that Jesus is coming back, and he's coming back to make war and to judge this earth. This earth deserves judging right now. I am amazed that he holds off as long as he has. His eyes were as a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. He had a name written that no man knew but he himself. God has a special name in heaven too. Just like he's going to give us a special name written on a stone, a white stone. That's for us. That's between us and him. He was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name was called the Word of God. This idea that God sits up there in heaven and he's just a pansy person, loves everybody, loves everything, is a wrong concept of God. He is a God of judge. He's a God of righteousness. You know, in this world, the things that are going on, we have to stand up against those things. And it's not pleasant, and it's not fun. And sometimes people die for it. But there are things in this world that are worth standing up against and fighting against. And God knows it too, and he's coming down here one day to finish the matter of what mankind is doing today. I mean, you see the world getting more evil every day, every week. The armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. That represents our life for Christ. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron. That comes from Psalm 2, about Christ ruling the world with a rod of iron. Now, you think about rulership. You look at all through history, or even today, look at the rulers of the world today, the different nations, how each one of them rules with their own ideas and their own concepts. It says that Jesus is going to rule with a rod of iron. What does that mean? It means he's not going to put up with any stuff from anybody. It's going to be his way or no way. You're either going to adhere to his program or you'll be smashed. He is not going to tolerate any rebellion or disobedience. He's tolerating it today, but there's going to come an end when he's not. He treadeth the winepress of the fierceness of the wrath of Almighty God. God gets mad. He has fierce anger, and he's going to exhibit it at this point in time at the end of the tribulation period. He hath on his vestiture and on his thigh, that word thigh should be banner. It's a mistranslated Greek word. He hath on his vestiture or his robe there, and on his banner, a name written King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's where that comes from. You see that caption a lot in different Christian books or banners and different things. But he is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he's going to show it to the world. He's going to have a big banner and says, here I am, here I'm coming. Guess what? Things are about to change. Yes?
Is heaven now empty of Christians?
No. No, Christians are in heaven right now.
No. I'm saying when this happens, when the armies follow him to earth, will heaven be empty of Christians?
Well, we're going to come down here and we're going to rule and reign with him. Yeah,
so
we'll be down here.
As
far as I can tell, yeah. Now, there may be an exception to that. If it is, we haven't been told. And I saw an angel standing in the sun. He cried with a loud voice, saying all to the fowls and the fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourselves together to the supper of the great God. This is how much destruction is going to be upon mankind. That you may eat the flesh of the kings, that's the rulers in this time during the Antichrist. Remember, this is the end of the Antichrist rule. You know, he had a federation of 10 nations. Three of them he has to do away with. So there'll be 7 nations left that will be honoring him, plus the other people. And this is who Christ is coming back to battle with. That you may eat the flesh of the kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of the mighty men, that's your warriors, the flesh of horses and of them that sit on them, the flesh of all men, both free and bond, small and great. It doesn't matter to Christ who you are, what title you've got, how much power you got, how strong you are, or anything else at this point in time. When he comes back to judge at the end of the tribulation period, doesn't matter who you are. You're not going to be able to stand against him. And I saw the beast, that's the Antichrist, and the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together. If you go to Israel, sometimes some of you have been, when we were there, Pastor John asked me what the most impressive sight was that I saw over there. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It was the Valley of Jehoshaphat out there where the Battle of Armageddon is going to be fought. You stand up on that mountain, Mount Carmel there, and you look, and as far as you can see from the right to the left is this massive valley. It's really incredible sight. Bennett took some good pictures of it, which I showed you some of. One photograph cannot do it justice, but this is where that great battle is going to be fought there, in that valley right there. Right. Gus makes a comment. Is that where the blood is going to be up to the horse bridled high? Yes, it is, for 200 miles long. All the armies of the world are going to be in that valley ready to battle Christ, and he and his army are going to battle him. Napoleon, when he conquered the Middle East over there during his time in the 1800s, he stood up there where we stood, and he looked out over that valley, and he made a comment. He said, all of the armies of the world could maneuver in this valley. And boy, he's right. You'd have to see it to believe it. I've seen a lot of pictures, but until you stand there and look at it in real life, you can't imagine the size of this place. Many battles have been fought there. Probably the most fought over piece of land anywhere on this earth. But the big one is coming, and this is what we're reading about here right now. Verse 19, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth, their armies gathered together to make war against him. Notice, they're there gathered for one thing. That's to do battle with Christ. They've got their kingship set up. They've got their empire set up, the Antichrist does, and he's not going to let go of it easily. He's going to battle Christ and his army. And again, war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. You're going to get to be part of this thing, okay? Any of you who've never got to be in a war or a combat, guess what? If you ride one of these horses down there, you're going to be part of the battle. Exactly how it's going to take place, I don't know. Weapons, so forth and so on. You know, we'll just have to wait till that time. But that's something to look forward to. Verse 20. The beast was taken, that, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him. Christ comes down. He's victorious. He gets a hold of the Antichrist. He gets a hold of the false prophet here, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. Both those were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. So the Antichrist and the false prophet, the two people, the main ones of the tribulation period, are going to be taken alive. They're not going to be killed. They're going to be taken alive, and they're going to be cast into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. And the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceedeth out of his mouth, and all the fowls were filled with their flesh. Now, we do know that's one weapon that will be used is God's word. We don't know exactly how that's going to work, how it's going to function, but all he has to do is speak, and that's going to be probably the main weapon of this whole battle in that time. So, any questions on that? This is setting the scene up now. This has to be done before the millennial reign can get started. God's got to cleanse this earth. He's going to start it all new for the 1,000-year reign. So the bad guys, the Antichrist, the false prophet, are taken out of the earth, cast alive in the lake burning with fire and brimstone, and that's where they are. They're away from humanity. You know, we see all the bad things going on in the world today. Satan is behind that, every bit of it. When you see bad things happen, Satan is there nudging these people, helping them. Go do this, go do that. In the book of Daniel, it's the only book in the entire Bible that gives us a behind-the-scenes notice of what really happens. The leaders of the countries. You watch the leaders of the nations today and what they do and the decisions that they make. People like Hitler, Putin, all these other people. I could go and name many of them. But they're all are being encouraged by Satan. Do this, do that. And this is what's happening in the world today. Yes. Right.
It's amazing at the power even the angels of God have.
That's right. I'm getting ready to get into that. That's right. Okay, look at chapter 20.
Carl, what is this lake of fire? I was always thinking it was under the earth, but is it above the visible right on the... I didn't know. I've never seen a lake of fire.
Well, the question is, where is the lake of fire? What is it really like? We don't know. We're not told where it is. You know, we're just not told any other details. We just said it's a lake of fire, and those two are going to be cast alive in there, and that's where they're going to be. There was a man made a video. I was telling Bonnie about it the other day. I was doing some research, and there was a man made a video about hell, and... things don't bother me much. I can watch pretty much anything. I've seen pretty much everything you can think of in my lifetime. But I'm going to tell you what, I tried to watch this thing, and there's a warning before you see it. Be careful. And I'll tell you what, I could watch about 3 minutes of it, and I had turned off. You're talking about scaring somebody, and I don't scare easily. But I'll tell you what, that thing was so bad and so realistic that I couldn't watch it. So that tells you how bad it was. So this lake of fire, it's going to be bad, okay? A young lady not long ago told me, she says, I've tried to study the Revelation, but she said, it was so scary, she said, I couldn't continue to study it. And she said, why is that? And I said, God's trying to scare you out of hell. That's why it's so bad. And that's literally what it's trying to do, make you aware of what is going to be the alternate to heaven. By the way, that's going to be our next study. Okay? Pastor John asked me to do that. So he said, since you're studying heaven, great place, wonderful things and all that, he said, why don't you do a study on hell? I said, thought about it, prayed about it. So our next series will be after heaven. It's going to be about hell. So... chapter 20, take a look here. And I saw an angel come down from heaven having a key, the key of the bottomless pit. We don't know exactly what that key is. We're talking about the spirit realm now. You know, you got keys that go in your house, in your car, and all that. That's something totally different. We don't know exactly what this key is. But he says it's the key of the bottomless pit. Where's the bottomless pit? We don't know. We're not told. Is it going through the earth? We just don't know. And a great chain in his hand. Now, how do you chain a spirit? I don't know. I don't know how you do it. People ask me, what's this chain made out of? I don't know. We're not told. But all I do know is that it works. He laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan. We know for sure who is talking about. And bound him 1,000 years. You know, there's so many people today that are claiming to be Christians. There are organizations today claiming to be Christian organizations and churches. They got big names. But you know what? They say nowhere in the Bible does it talk about 1,000-year reign of Christ. I don't know what they did. They must have threw away the book of Revelation. It's here just plain and simple. It says right here, Satan is bound 1,000 years. And cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up, set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled. Now, I don't know how much plainer it can be about 1,000-year rule of Christ without the devil being around to stir up trouble and cause animosity and all the things that go on in the world today. Somebody asked me not long ago, said, Why does the world hate the Jews? The reason they hate the Jews is because Satan is behind anti-Semitism. If you can destroy the Jewish nation, I've said this over and over, and I'll say it till the day I leave this world. If you can destroy the Jewish nation, then you can call God a liar. And that's what Satan is attempting to do. If you read Jeremiah 31, it tells you the answer to that question. The Jews, as long as they live, as long as they exist, are a testament that God is true, God is real. His word is solid and firm and true. But if you could destroy the Jews, then Satan could go up to God's throne and say, "You're a liar. You said they would always exist, and now they're gone." So this is why the great purges through the years have tried to annihilate the Jewish nation. That's why you've had people like Hitler, Stalin, and I could go on and on and on, the Roman Empire. I could go on and on through history, the kings of Spain, Ferdinand, Isabella, England through England at one time in the Middle Ages, through all the Jews out of England. If you were a Jew, you couldn't live in England. I could go on and on and on. All this is what Satan is trying to do to destroy the Jewish nation. Again, if he can do that, God can be called a liar. And that's not going to happen. So if you want to know what's behind it, if you look around today, what's going on in our nation, anti-Semitism, all in Europe is rising now again. The head Jewish rabbi in France a couple of weeks ago, here was his message to the Jews of France. "You better get out now while you can." He said it's like the 1930s over here. So you better get out while you got the chance. "Till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed or released a little season or for a little while." Now, after the 1,000 years is over, God is going to allow Satan to be released again. Now, I don't get into the details, but what happens is, I'll read you the scriptures later, but right now what it does is, after 1,000 years of rulership on this earth, perfect environment. There's no hunger, there's no need, there's no suffering, there's no pain. The world is back like it was in the Garden of Eden. But yet, in spite of all that, after 1,000 years, there are people on this earth that are born. There's going to be humans. They're going to be born. Population's going to increase. At the end of 1,000 years, people are still going to rebel. Even after a perfect environment. You know, I hear people, philosophers, and all these people up here that have all this great education, they say, well, if man just had a perfect environment, if everything was good, there wouldn't be any bad people. There wouldn't be any bad things happening on the earth. Yeah, it would, because man's heart is evil and wicked, as Jeremiah says, above all things. Who can know it? So at the end of 1,000 years, perfect environment, everything that you could want or need is here. At the end of that, God turns Satan loose again to let the people who are on the earth to see who is true allegiance to him and who will follow Satan. And there's going to be a huge amount of these people that will follow this last rebellion of Satan. So, what now, Gus? Who, the people come back with Jesus?
Yeah, people. Aren't they going to come back down out of heaven?
Yes. We're going to get into that, Gus, in the 1,000-year reign. I'll get into that in detail. That's our next subject of study, is the 1,000-year reign. Okay? Yeah, we'll be here with them. verse 4, let me read that. "I saw thrones, and they sat upon them. Judgment was given unto them, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus." This is the tribulation saints. "For the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, nor had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Now, I don't know how much plainer it can be. The tribulation saints are going to be given roles to rule and reign with him for 1,000 years as well. But notice this. The rest of the dead lived not again until the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. The evil dead, the Christ-rejecting dead, are not going to be raised until after that 1,000 years. They're going to stay in the graves. That's when the great white throne judgment is done at the end of the 1,000 years. But during that time, these saints, we're going to be ruling and reigning with him for the 1,000 years period of his rulership. Any questions on that? That sets the stage now for the millennial reign. Okay, turn now. Back to my notes. Turn to John chapter 14. Okay, Christ comes back. He sets up the millennial reign. He's now the ruler from Jerusalem. Like I say, you can read Ezekiel chapter 40 through 48, and that'll tell you what's going on in Jerusalem, there in Israel, about the rebuilding of the nation. That's another study. But in John chapter 14, you say, okay, what are we going to be doing? What about the people who have made allegiance to Christ through the ages? Take a look here at chapter 14, where Jesus makes this statement here to his people. Let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. He said, told the disciples here, he's talking to them. He said, don't be worried about anything, okay? Just believe in me. You believe in God. Believe in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. You've heard this verse over and over and over. It could be dwelling places as well. In other words, he said here, in my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Jesus telling his disciples, listen, there's coming a time that I'm going up there to fix you a home. And there's coming a time that you're going to be with me, and you're going to be in this place that I'm preparing for. He's building you a house. Some of you are building houses now or have built houses. Nothing like this house is going to be here. And he says here, that where I am, there you may be also. And whether I go, you know, and the way, you know. You come through me, I've told you. This is how you get there. And I'm building you a place to live. Now he's making them a promise here on that. Turn to, yes. This is on the earth. Yeah. This is on the earth. Now, turn to Matthew 19. Verse 27. Now, let's get the setting here. The setting is Jesus has just encountered the rich young ruler. The man got a lot of money, a lot of power. And he tells Jesus, he said, I've been perfect all my life, which he had been. But he said, what do I must do to inherit the heaven and everything else? Jesus told him, he said, well, get rid of all your goods, give it to the poor. And he said, follow me. And the man said, thinks about it. And he said, I can give all the stuff I got here up. Man, he said, even follow you, I'm going to keep my stuff. But well, Gus, you're not going to have a family. You're not going to have a family. You're going to be a separate entity, okay? Now, will you know your family? Yes. Will you know your wife? Will you know your husband, your children? Yes. But each one of you are going to be serving Christ as an individual in your capacity, however you have served him on this earth, okay? There's not going to be mom, dad, and children up in heaven. Now, you're going to know who they are, who they were on the earth, but the whole concept of life is changing. We have the family unit down here to procreate and develop a family for Christ. But it's like maturing. It's going beyond this earthly life and mature into the spirit world to serve Him. Okay? Look at it. So the setting here is a rich young man, and Jesus told him, said, hey, you got sell all your goods, because he loved him so much. And that's what Jesus told him to do. You know, a lot of people are wealthy, and there's nothing wrong with wealth whatsoever. It's what you do with it. It's what you care about it. Do you care more about it than you do serving Christ? Do you care more about it than you do doing His will? Are you hoarding it up? You know, you're not going to take it with you. But what are you doing with it? This is what he's going to ask. And he's telling this rich young ruler, he knows his heart. He loves that wealth. And he says, to get rid of that problem, you've got that your first priority. Sell it, go, you know, come follow me. So this is the setting here. Now we get down to verse 27. Look what happens. Peter's over here in this conversation. And Peter says, then answered Peter and said unto him, behold, we have forsaken all, followed thee. What shall we have therefore? Now Peter's thinking, man, look what we've done. Hey, Lord, you're telling this rich young man to sell all his stuff and follow you. And what about us? I mean, look what we've got. I gave up my fishing business. I mean, I love my fishing business. And we know because he went right back to it after the resurrection of Christ. And he loved fishing. And he said, I gave that up for you. What about Matthew over here? He's a tax collector for the Roman Empire. Man, he has got it made. I mean, he's making money hand over fist. So what about Matthew? He's giving all this up to follow you. And I could go on and on and on with the other disciples. So, Lord, what's in it for us? And Jesus said unto them, verily, or truly, I say unto you, that ye which have followed me in the regeneration, when the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, it's talking about the kingdom here on the earth, she shall also sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, this is what the disciples, the apostles, the 12 apostles are going to be doing. Jesus tells Peter, yeah, y'all give up all this for me right now. But guess what? When I'm ruling the earth during the millennial reign, the 12 of you have given up so much, I'm going to let you sit over a throne judging the 12 tribes of Israel, each one of you. That's going to be your reward. And every one that hath forsaken houses, brethren, sisters, father, mother, wife, or children. Now that doesn't mean to abandon your children and your wives. That's not what it's saying. It's saying that you have put them secondary to me. Okay? Or lands for my name's sake shall receive 100-fold and shall inherit everlasting life. Now, Jesus makes a statement to the disciples. He said, look, yeah, you've given up a whole lot. You really have. And your reward during the millennial reign, when I rule this earth, is going to be each one of you is going to have a tribe of Israel. You know, there's a saying around today that we have the 10 lost tribes. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody knows where they are. Yes, God does. He knows exactly who they are. He knows where they are. I'm not going to get into that study. That's a study of its own. By the way, I'll make this statement. A big part of the 10 tribes that were assimilated into Assyria went back to Judea in the latter times before the Roman destruction of Jerusalem. So they were there again. But there is... God knows exactly where the 12 tribes are. During the millennial reign, he's going to have the apostles, each one sitting over a tribe and ruling them. So, you know, everybody talks about, well, we're going to do away with Israel. Iran sits up there today and says, as soon as we get the, get the nuke. Guess what we're going to do? We're going to annihilate Israel. The UN is calling for the annihilation of Israel. And it goes on and on and on. It's not going to happen. The 12 tribes are going to be ruling in Israel, and the apostles are going to be ruling over them during the millennial reign. So, you know, forget this idea of what these people are saying today and these nations about Israel. It's going to be there. Any questions? I'm going to stop there for time's sake. Anybody have any questions? Yes, Linda. Okay. That's a good question. All right. Here's the question. The question is, what about Paul? Paul wasn't one of the 12 apostles. Okay? That is correct. Now, Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles, just as Peter was the apostle to the Jewish people. Now, let me make this statement about that. Judas gave up, in the book of Acts, it says that Judas gave up his bishopric, or his position of an apostle. Now, Paul repeats over and over in his epistles that he is an apostle by the will of Jesus Christ. Okay. Now, Judas will not have one of those thrones. He gave it up. Paul will have his throne. There's not 13 apostles. There's only 12. All right. Now, there's a lot of argument about this, and I know I'm controversial on this issue, but let me say this. Judas gave up his bishopric. Paul was moved into place. If you notice, all the apostles, I know they voted another guy to be an apostle, but let me tell you something about the apostles. There's a requirement for being an apostle. One of it is Jesus personally called every apostle. Okay? This guy they voted for casting dice wasn't called by Christ. Okay? And you had to have been called personally by him. So this guy was a nice guy, probably doing good work and all that, but he's not the apostle that took the place. Paul is. So Paul will be ruling on one of those thrones. Even though he was the apostle to the Gentiles, he's still a Jewish apostle. Okay? Anybody else? That's an argument that's been going on a long time. That Paul was the 13th apostle. No, he was the 12th apostle. There's only 12. Let's have a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for this study. All the blessings that you've given us. And Lord, all these great things that we can look forward to that we're going to be able to participate in. And the great blessings that you're going to bring upon this earth once evil has been eradicated and removed and put away from this world. Lead, guide, and direct us this week. Help us to show others these great things. In Jesus' name, we ask these things. Amen. Y'all have a great week, and call me if you need me.